Hello and welcome to the Your Politics podcast. Joining me this week are Juliette Gash, Fiacra O'Ciona and Joe McGrady. It's been some week, guys. A budget. And at the end of it all, the cost of phone pouches is where things are most troublesome.
Yes, but this really kind of it sums up where we are on the in the political campaigning really at this stage. As you know, it's a multi-billion euro budget. It's a giveaway budget. There's lots of things on the tables for people. The opposition is looking for something to criticise it with, and it's landed not like in the past on medical cards, not like in the past on other maybe bigger, more worthy issues, but it's decided to focus on phone pouches, which government has kind of rephrased now as magnetic lock containers. That's a 9 million euro cost in the budget. May not be huge in the budget, but opposition certainly say, and Sinn Féin and the Social Democrats have been saying in the Dáil today that look, that's an issue that they believe is indicative of overspending and not realising the value of money for the government.
And it ties into that serial wasters charge made by Piers Doherty during his budget speech.
But I have to say, it's an unenviable task to be in the opposition dealing with a budget like that. I mean, there was literally, it was the late, late budget, as they say, one for everybody in the audience, I think. You know, you'd feel sorry for them really trying to oppose a budget like that. And I thought it was instructive, Michal, and you were covering this yourself yesterday. Leaders' questions immediately the day after the budget was announced. It wasn't raised by any of the leaders directly on leaders' questions. They went for scoliosis. They went for various other topics that we know have been around for quite a while. And that kind of spoke, I thought, a bit about, you know, where they were at with the thing. Albeit now, there were leader statements, of course, in the Dáil yesterday on the budget specifically. And there was lots of you know, very good quotes there. Vanna Batchik was talking about the glitter ball budget, that it was all glitter and it was all shiny and it was all going to disappear. Mary Lou McDonald saying something similar.
Jed Nash talking about it being gravy. I was like, let's not mix our metaphors too much. We've got glitter balls and gravy. But yeah, I think Joe's right. That whole, where do you pick holes in a budget that is giving a little bit to everyone? But I think this phone pouch or electronic magnetic phone lockable box trips off the tongue. It is indicative perhaps of this idea of having piecemeal items that are dealt with rather than a big strategic vision. And I was looking at teachers' response to this today. The ASTI are saying, you know, this shows that the government is spending a lot of money on a problem that's already under control. A lot of people saying this is a pet project as well of Norma Foley. And then teachers saying, like, why are you spending 9 million on this when you could spend, if it is to do with the children's mental health, which is what Norma Foley said, you could spend it on occupational therapists, educational psychologists, and people breaking down what that money could go
and
on.
And the Dáil hearing today from Piers Doherty again that there are children with extra needs who don't have any school place at all.
At all, still. Yeah, exactly. And Holly Cairns was making that point too, that there are still massive disability issues and this is just the wrong way to spend the money.
I thought Jack Chambers, though, on Leaders, who was taking Leaders today and was defending this, obviously he being the minister, I thought he was making a reasonable argument as well, which is that smartphones, we've been talking about them for basically since they've been a thing for our young people, of all the problems they're causing, between, you know, problems with the eating disorders or bullying or all of that stuff. And of course, having them in secondary schools is where a lot of this stuff probably comes into focus. So I think they can probably defend it, even though when you juxtapose it with other things, it's very difficult it seems very difficult to do so. But you could do that with an awful lot of parts of the budget as well, I think, couldn't you?
Yeah, it is certainly something that Jack Chambers did raise in Leaders Today. Now, he described the opposition criticism. He said that it was populist, shallow and divisive, and he made it clear that it's not a waste of money. Now, Piers Doherty's response to that was very simple. He said, are you for real?
Are you for
this
real?
Is 9 million euro on what ASTI, the Teacher Association, according to Piers Doherty, says isn't really that big an issue as all. Again, it comes back to the fact that, look, opposition need to hit government on something post-budget and pre-election. And this is what they're focusing in on.
And
as Joe said 2 days after.
It comes off the back, doesn't it, of the security hut or office, if you want to call it that, or the bike shed or shelter, if you want to call it that. And the Children's Hospital, of course, put it all together. I mean, is there a danger, though, if this government sits around and doesn't go for the election, that that waster's charge is going to become heavier?
Well, that's certainly what the opposition will be targeting, whether an election is called in the coming weeks or whether an election isn't called until early next year. That would be the concern for government. But you do have to say that, look, for government, they've gotten through a budget. They've given, as Joe was saying, a late show kind of budget. Social Democrats a couple of days ago were calling it Bertie-nomics, basically, or return of Bertie Ahern era, Celtic Tiger, give everyone a little bit of everything to keep everybody just about happy.
Splash the cash and hope it works. Is that the...
Hope it works and charge. Hope there's not a tsunami or a flood of negativity that comes afterwards.
Sometimes things can cut through all of the debate as well. And I thought Sinn Féin TD Mark Ward put a video up on his social media there, which showed him popping his smartphone into a Zip-It plastic bag. And he just speaks to camera and says, there, I've saved the government €9 million. So, you know, people will see that as well. And they will say, well, you know, what's really going on here? You know, and the narrative, I don't think there's been an appearance by any of the opposition parties in any public event since the budget where they haven't brought up the bicycle shed, the security hut and the children's hospital.
And when it comes to that election then, I mean, where are we at on that? I mean, are there real moves afoot to try and speed up the business of the Dáil to get the finance bill and the social welfare bill, social protection bill through? Or are we just still, despite everything and despite that massive sense of momentum and sense of anticipation building now, we probably haven't got the clear signal yet that it is happening?
Well, a straw in the wind, so to speak, yesterday, Simon Harris was out canvassing at Stephen's Green. I don't know if you saw the pictures of the guys, I'm sure. So it was announced he was going to be there at 8:30 in the morning. And we were there for about 8:15. There was senior ministers, there was junior ministers, there was candidates there. They were all
Aurons and Baurons.
Yes, everyone is getting ready and everybody was there with the leader, you know. So there's no doubt about it that the pressure has built in the wake of this budget. It was already there, the speculation going on and on and on. Simon Harris still not willing to clarify anything, but he's certainly not ruling anything out and he's leaving himself plenty of wriggle room. And you talk about the agenda. Is the agenda been sped up? Are the decks been cleared slightly? There does seem to have, that appearance is there now.
But for all that, the finance minister would say the bill was going to go to cabinet, the finance bill, which underpins the budget next Tuesday anyway. And as of now, Chambers isn't bringing it forward. But I suppose everything does centre on this chat that has to happen among the leaders. And we think that will happen after Simon Harris comes back from his trip to Washington. At the same time, it has been pointed out to me that the leaders meet, we always kind of assume it's once a week. Apparently they meet 3 or 4 times a week. So the chat could happen at any time.
Yeah, their relationship is so good. They would say that they meet sure all the time. Should they go for pints and coffees or whatever?
Of course,
else?
The other three never went for dinner. We do know that, don't we? Eamon Ryan, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin.
We do know that. So maybe they're a little bit more fed now or more aware of what's on the menu in the coming weeks.
You're right.
That the window of opportunity, if you're to believe the rumours that are circulating around Leinster House, is that, look, Simon Harris comes back from his meeting with Joe Biden and about Irish-US relations over the past 100 years. And, you know, he might go to cabinet and then he might go. He may also wait another week or he may still wait until early next year. But certainly the indications are that it's going to be in the next couple of weeks.
It has to be made kind of clear, though. I think when he does come back from Washington, even if things are going to progress at that point, he doesn't call the election then.
At that point,
but a signal has to be sent that the finance bill is going to speed up. Things are going to start moving.
Exactly. And if you even look around, there was a good straw poll done by Harry McGee in the Irish Times today, where he spoke with 30 TDs and senators from across the political spectrum. And it's only a snapshot, only their opinion about when the election is going to be. All but two said the election is going to be in November. So that really is an indication of where people's mindset is. Whether that is an accurate mindset or not remains to be seen.
Juliet, are you with the two or the 28?
With the 28. The 28, yeah, it's one of those things. It feels like an election. It really does. The giveaway didn't dampen that down anyway. And any politicians I spoke to, even a few weeks back, were all saying, we're ready, bring it on, it's time. But
Micheál, do you have any sense, though, that the leaders have deliberately avoided having the discussion?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think that's been going on as well, hasn't it?
Yes.
Like they're not having that discussion.
suppose Micheál Martin too was talking, isn't he, about there are other pieces of legislation, the gambling bill, the planning legislation and the mental health bill that needs to get through. But if there is another 2 or 3 weeks in it, that could all be done, couldn't it? And you could still have your pre-Christmas election.
And it gets trickier then as well, because obviously it's the Taoiseach's prerogative to call the election. But he can't call it, of course, unless he has agreement from the others, because if they're not in agreement, then the finance bill may not pass or the planning bill may not pass. And it would look like the government ending in complete chaos. Mm-hmm. So they are locked together. There's some expression to describe it, but they have to remain working together
for a bit longer anyway.
For an orderly end to this government whenever it happens.
When you think, sorry, Simon Harris, like, it's so political and everything is looked through that prism. And despite the kind of sense of affability, there are those within the party say it's very hard to read him actually behind it all and as to what he's thinking. If Simon Harris really wants this November election, notwithstanding what Micheál Martin says, would you think he'd be more inclined to push it than, say, Leo Varadkar, who in the end, it seems, became quite good friends with Eamon Ryan and Micheál Martin?
I think at his core, and you're right, sometimes he is quite hard to read, but I think at his core, Simon Harris is a pragmatist. And Simon Harris will do what is firstly in Fine Gael's best interests.
Politically rootless, I
would say, honest. And I don't necessarily mean that as a criticism. No, and secondly, what's in his best interest for what he wants in a few months' time when he wants to be back in government. That's the same for any politician. You look on
I suppose Enda Kenny and John Burton that time when it all looked to be going towards
November of 2015. That's a great example, because you know the plan was to go basically to have a November election 2015. That was the plan until it suddenly wasn't the plan.
Enda listened to Joan.
And
would Simon listen to Micheál?
I think Simon will probably be aware of what happened in 2015.
But can you ever be sure though? I mean, Micheál Martin's claim yesterday that there's no ideal time in the winter, even though 95% of politicians here think November is preferable. I mean, can you be absolutely sure of those things, Julia?
No, you can't. I mean, he was down at the ploughing there a few weeks back on the beautiful sunny days, and he was saying, you know, June is the best time for an election.
Yeah.
So, you know, no one,
no
one really wants to go in November or in February. Neither is an ideal time, but one of them has to be the right time. So,
Somebody's been saying to me December, that the first week in December, everyone's cheerful.
Happy time.
They're getting optimistic going into Christmas, that, you know, the end, you know, you're halfway through the winter, things are sort of positive at that time. Might be a bad time. You know, the first week in September would be the 6th of December, I think.
Yes.
It's that, or 29th. The
previous
Friday.
The 8th of December was traditionally when the country people came to town.
Went shopping, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I think that has dissipated over the last number of years.
Want to hold an election on November 8th because all of South Dublin would be at an All Blacks game, could the country people argument?
Well, of course, they're all ordering it online now, detriment of local shops and local services.
That's
but
true.
That's another debate.
There's another point on winter elections. I'm hearing from some TDs today that you cannot, in a way that you could in the past, canvass rural areas late into the evening and late in the dark due to kind of a sense of it's not done anymore. Mm. There's safety concerns and that changes the dynamic for a rural TD who wants to get out and cover every bit of ground, every laneway in their constituency.
Yeah.
But I suppose November is no different to February in that regard.
Yeah, it isn't really. Yeah. Or to December either. Mm-hmm. You've heard it here first on December date. The other thing is, of course, in recent years, you know, people always talked about the air war and the ground war, you know, and the air war and the online war. Basically the campaigning in those formats, whether it's on your local radio, on the national broadcaster, whether it's on your Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, an awful lot of it will be done there. And of course, very importantly, with your election posters. Mm-hmm. I know people diss election posters, but study after study has shown it is one of the best ways for people to find out. And it is, people have, you know, surveyed, have said this, that it raises the awareness of an election. And any politician will tell you it's so important.
It's everyone says they've got them printed as well.
And they're all done,
done. They're all ready. They're all in storage. They're just waiting to be
When it is called then, I mean, the last time you saw the possibility of the coalition that did emerge was held out there by Leo Varadkar saying Fianna Fáil was the last resort. So how it's going to be different this time, you sense? No, there's no formal pact, there's no formal alliance, but there is an expectation within the two parties that they could transfer to each other and that they could be back in government. How are they going to handle that and the kind of key debates? And the debates will be important in a winter election, and definitely for the last week of the campaign, there is a presidential vibe to the whole thing.
Well, it's certainly the case that, look, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, they have been in a coalition since 2020. They were, you know, unofficially in a coalition with Confidence and Spydeal since 2016. But, you know, it's certainly the perception that people have in it. So there is a real sense that maybe, you know, there isn't a huge amount of light between the two of them at this stage. They would both probably disagree on it. And that's certainly a line that opposition will no doubt try and take advantage of, and particularly Sinn Féin would try and take advantage of and say, look, those two are birds of a feather, and we're something different. Whether that works or not, it's all going to depend over the coming weeks or the coming months.
But you're already seeing little jibes, you know, this sort of unnamed Fine Gael South County Dublin people complaining about this so-called mansion tax, which of course came from the Fianna Fáil side, and then also complaints today about this being a Norma Foley, you know, solo run from the Fine Gael side again.
You have a Fine Gael candidate in Cork South Central, Una McCarthy, so who's an assistant principal in school, saying the funds could have been used far better. That's
absolutely
an open shot.
Yeah,
isn't it?
So you are seeing these things happening now, where there's a little bit, oh, there is clear water between us, and you know, let's make that point.
I wonder how much of that, though, is orchestrated and how much of that is genuine. I guess, you know, it's one of those issues. Those people may have genuinely held views on it, but, you know, it doesn't hurt either party, as you say, to have a bit of clear water. Mm.
It's interesting too, though, isn't it, that this breakup, when it does come, do you fully believe that it will be harmonious, that they will?
Well, I mean, on paper, it's paper thin, the division between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, in many, many ways. But when it comes to an election, you know, people have to start looking at where they're standing in terms of public support. And if you look at the opinion polls, Fine Gael have pulled ahead substantially now at this stage. Now, obviously, there's various things you can say about opinion polls and margins of error, et cetera, et cetera. But if Fianna Fáil sees Fine Gael pulling ahead too far, well, that might be of concern to them, you know. Mm-hmm.
Concern enough not to go in November?
Certainly concern enough for them to be considering what their strategy should be. Micheál Martin has said February a couple of times now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure is that his real thinking, but that could be a concern, that they might say, let's go longer. And then again, you see, you know, if Fine Gael is getting stronger, Fianna Fáil are not as strong. Well, Fianna Fáil can look elsewhere for a coalition partner too, and, you know, ultimately, you
even though that's kind of been ruled out for the moment, hasn't
well,
it
has been, but everything can be ruled out in a campaign, and then in the real politic of a post-election, things can be looked at again.
And that has been Micheál Martin's stance, is when the people speak,
you
have to make a government.
We've seen that time and again, where once the election takes place, then people have to, you know, they compromise on their policies, they compromise on their stands in relation to one another. Was it Pat Rabbit who famously said that's what you do
That was in relation to claims that were made on election posters and all that. He said that's what you do during an election. He's quite touchy and tetchy as to the actual context of all that. So we wouldn't dare want to get that wrong. You know,
I apologise if in any way I would have got it wrong. But that's what I'm talking about. You say one thing during the campaign and sometimes things change afterwards.
The question of the VAT, we spoke about it on the night of the budget. Mm-hmm. That is something that Fine Gael in particular are getting a bit of flack to, because the Taoiseach went around the country and had those listening ears, listening, but hasn't delivered, the hospitality sector would say, for them. Is that something that could hit Fine Gael in particular? It's definitely their partisan government say it's their side of the house.
Well, it's definitely, as you said, their side of the house. It's definitely, you would think, a significant proportion of hospitality sector you know, company owners and restaurant owners, that sort of thing, would perhaps lean towards Fine Gael in these matters. They were certainly, their lobby group was certainly expecting a cut to 9%. They're saying, look, this is a disaster for them. And it is of something of a surprise that maybe in a giveaway budget that Fine Gael maybe had its fingerprints on a lot of it, that for whatever reason it didn't get that over the line. They were pushing this. They were pushing this right up until the Ed Peter Burke, the minister in charge of this, looked somewhat crestfallen on budget day that he hadn't got this over the line. He was defending it. Now, whether whether that is going to hit them as badly as maybe there would be some concerns about, I don't know.
The thing is, as well, I suppose a lot of these businesses do particularly well at this part of the year. So up until Christmas and until just after, they are probably okay. It's in the dark days of January and February that it's really going to hit, and you're really going to see, I would imagine, an accelerated rate of closures.
Mm-hmm. But we have seen a number of high profile closures of restaurants that you would have thought were well established with well established operators, and they're gone. And we've seen a lot of cafes disappearing as well. Mm-hmm. And so while the government says, yeah, we won't change the VAT rate, but there's a package there for you. There's money available another way.
4,000 grants.
4,000 euros. I'm not sure that cuts the mustard for people either. You know, because on top simply of the inability to make a profit, there's these people spend all of their hours, all of their days working in these restaurants, working these businesses to keep the doors open. For probably what's modest enough profits anyway.
But isn't the difficulty, I suppose, that they can't split up the smaller businesses from the big businesses who are still making a lot of money?
That's part of the problem, yeah. But so, the government could get a kicking on that in that regard from those small business operators, you know.
But of course, the tax break for strawberry wine was introduced in the budget. will that make any difference?
Have you ever had strawberry wine?
No.
It's very nice.
It's in a song, isn't there? There's a song with Bono and Andrea Corr along the way.
They
talk about strawberry wine, don't they?
They make some out of various berries, and it's very nice, but it's also very niche, you know.
And it's called strawberry wine, even though it's various berries.
No, they have a strawberry one, they have a raspberry one, and they've I think a mixed berry one.
Well, for the Christmas party, we'll bring some in here in Mayhall for the Christmas podcast. Yeah. Strawberry wine is probably suitably red as well.
On a completely different note, on a sad note, one of the big figures of Irish politics over several decades, Mary O'Rourke, has passed away, the former deputy leader of Fianna Fáil, and of course, former cabinet minister as well, holding the education, health and public enterprise portfolios. Someone whose name was just synonymous with being part of a political dynasty, but really being a force in her own right as well in Irish politics, Jim.
Yeah, she certainly was. And for so many years, through all those years, from the high era through Albert Reynolds right through to Bertie Ahern, she was part and parcel of Fianna Fáil, the front benches of Fianna Fáil. There was a part of that time, of course, when she wasn't at the front benches, but Bertie Ahern brought her back as the deputy leader and made her minister again. So, she was a huge character, I think, in Irish politics. She was a strong personality. She knew her own mind. She was liberal, but she was also grounded in the rural background from Athlone in County Westmeath, where she grew up. And lived indeed, of course. But she had a huge impact, really. And I think there'll be a lot of tributes paid to her over the next few days. The dynasty, of course, was also very strong as well. The Lenehans, Mary O'Rourke.
Father, brother, and then two nephews as well, Brian and Connor. I suppose, there's straight talking in politics has become kind of a requirement, whether we get it or not, but it's seen as something that's necessary nowadays. And the present Taoiseach, part of his political rise, kind of linked to that ability. Mary O'Rourke was doing that before many others were doing it. Sometimes it could be quite tetchy, prickly, but it was a straight talking way of doing things.
Well, that's exactly what it was. She was really, in that sense, she was before her time, because she would say what she felt needed to be said. And I think you said that she was a force in politics. She was also very forceful. She said what was on her mind. And of course, if we were to bring it forward to the present day, in 2010, she gave an interview with RTE where she said that she doesn't see a huge difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and she wouldn't be surprised if they go in. That was controversial at the time. Within 10 years, it happens. You know, she is somebody who had her finger on the pulse of Irish politics, whether you agreed with her or not. She is somebody who knew how to speak plainly and speak firmly to make her points. And she was also a dab hand at being nuanced to get away from key points when she needed to as well. So really, really a big force in Irish politics.
Julia, when you look at Mary O'Rourke's career, like going back to the 70s as a councillor and even standing again all the way up to 2011 unsuccessfully, the long, lengthy political career like that, if when we look at what's happening in the Dáil today, and there are so many people, fairly young, when you get to my age anyway, they seem fairly young, who are leaving politics. We probably won't see many careers of that length and duration again.
I don't think so. There's so many people from a different party, most notably retiring or leaving when they're far from retirement age. So, I mean, whatever your politics, you have to admire that tenacity and dedication to which is public service. She would have had plenty of people who weren't fans, but I think that, like, you know, like Fiacre was saying, that this ability to just talk straight and maintain a career and a family at a time when a lot of women didn't, I think is a very important legacy for her. She also had that post-politics career as a commentator. You know, she was on the airwaves an awful lot, and she was always relied on for great sound bites and humour and that, again, that straight-talking vibe. And I hope I'm not being disrespectful, but that nickname of Mammy, you know, people really identified with that. That was, of course, a nickname that was also given in German to Angela Merkel, you know, so it was said with high regard too. Mm. She'll certainly be remembered.
One of those figures, of course, that would appear as much on political programmes and kind of mainstream entertainment programmes as well. She did manage to bridge that. And she still did that, even in the aftermath of her time as public enterprise minister, which will be remembered by and large for a period where she advocated snapping up those Aircom shares, which stung many people financially and probably cost her our seat in that period as well.
Yeah, they do say that she lost her seat in the subsequent election because of that. And if you think back at the time, I'd say the Aircom launch, it was the first time that, you know, thousands and thousands of people would ever have considered buying shares in a company. Mm. So people, there was ads on the television, there was, I don't know if you recall the ad on the television, everybody's walking up a hill to where there's a light or something like that. Mm. I always thought, of course, the music on that ad, the music was Dulamon. Dulamon is a traditional Irish song about seaweed.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was very inappropriate. It might have been Clonard, actually.
Okay.
But anyway, that was the music on the ad, which didn't seem to me to be correct at all for what you were trying to sell, which was Aircom shares.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe that was a sign of what was to come, because it didn't work out at all. The shares, as soon as they were launched, I think they were losing money straight away, and a lot of people lost a lot of money.
I mean, people took loans out to buy those shares. You know, there was there was financial advice given, wasn't there? Anyway, there was financial advice given to tell people, buy the shares, this is a safe bet. And
I was a callow youth at the time, and I thought, oh yeah, I'll buy some shares in Aircom. And whatever happened, the 50 or 100 euro I put into it ended up now in a single share in Vodafone, which I still own, which is worth 2 euro. And I get a check every 2 years for 2 cent or 5 cent or something. And I'm always saying,
you're saving it up.
Cent counts, Joe.
The cost of sending me the check for the 2 cent of a dividend that I've got on that investment in Aircom all those years ago.
Despite your financial woes, Mary O'Rourke did go back to win her seat in 2007.
She did.
It's there. We leave it now. Hopefully, when we join you again for the next edition of Your Politics, the government party leaders will have that chat, and we'll know more about when exactly voters will get to cast their views on this government. Until then, good luck.